Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today I have part two of my episode with Amy Fast. We are talking all about teacher well-being, all about taking care of our teachers, and the power of loving your work. One of my favorite episodes by far, I think, with Amy Fast. This talk that I've had with this fantastic principal, fantastic educator, has been enlightening to say the least. I think you guys are really connecting to it, and I think some of the things that she's talked about on this podcast so far through this discussion, I mean, they're powerful stuff. I mean, when I was sitting back and I'm, you know, thinking about doing this reflection for the first time on this podcast, I was like, I've never reflected before live, or I've never recorded my reflections as I think about this, but I always think about the episodes after I make them. You know, I get to making the podcast episodes, we jump in, we talk, and we interview, and we have all these questions, but I don't really take in what's happening in those episodes until after, right? Until I'm listening back to it, or I'm editing it, and I get to listen to it 8,000 times as I'm going through and cutting and putting stuff together. But one of the big takeaways I took from part one of this conversation is this idea of taking care of your teachers, but more importantly, knowing the importance of meeting teachers' needs. And not every teacher has the same need. We talk about in part one of our conversation that some teachers need that deep work. They don't necessarily need to be coddled or told that they're doing awesome, or, you know, having constant affirmations their way. They just need to be challenged, they need to be pushed, and they need to be encouraged to do super challenging things in their classroom. And that is how they get their well-being. While on the other side, some people really do need affirmations daily, weekly basis to make them feel like they're doing their best work. The thing that we have to take into account, both as colleagues of teachers and administrators, you know, whatever side of the educational spectrum you're on, is to think about to our teachers, to everyone involved, is to help take care of each other. So if you're working with somebody who needs affirmations and who needs feedback and who needs to be able to interact, or a shoulder to talk to, or, you know, whatever that person needs, then I think as educators, we should work on each other's well-being. I think it's unfair to say that administrators alone are responsible for taking care of teachers. I think we also have to take care of each other. Our jobs are hard. We have so many things to do. There are challenges at every turn. And depending on what your needs are as an educator, some people need time to just be alone and not have to talk to somebody. That's kind of my camp. I need alone time to kind of process in my brain. And it's not me being a loner, it's just me wanting to be in my zone to kind of refocus on what I'm trying to do. While others might want more people around them, they love that community aspect of teaching, and it really does help them. So as educators, I think we need to be aware of what each other's needs are and help each other do that. We all know, we all seen our administrators running around the school doing 8 million things, and their view on how to take care of teachers can be skewed because of that. But they just have a lot of things on their plate. And I just think it's a little bit unfair to always push that on them. Like for me, like I feel like I have so much to do and I'm exhausted. And if you've ever watched videos I've posted on Facebook, you know, I talk about how the job I do, I go home and I'm just so tired. But it's a good type of tired for me. I'm in a place and at a school and in a position to where nearly everything I'm doing
is a good type of tiring. I'm exhausted, but I'm happy that I'm exhausted because I'm doing this extremely important work. I have the freedom, you know, I have administration backing me up on the independent reading program we run in my classroom. My kids have the freedom to read. We do a lot of flexible things. Very few times does someone step into my space and say, I need to do this, this, and this. I'm very thankful for that, but that also means I get to be creative and explore and do really hard things. And I tire myself out when I do those things. And that is that's the good type of well-being. And I think that's what you need to ask yourselves. As you're listening through the next episode with Amy Fast, and you go back maybe and you're listening to the first episode, is to ask yourself as a teacher, are you tired because you are doing work that you feel is meaningless, that you feel is over-controlled? Or are you tired because you're doing quality work? Are you tired because you're pushing yourself, or you're being pushed by an academic coach, or you're being pushed by your administration to do bigger and better things? I think we owe it to ourselves to ask ourselves this question, because it's very possible that you've just never been pushed before, or you haven't been pushed in a long time if you've been teaching for a while and you're getting tired and you're feeling run down, but it's because you're not acclimating yourself to the big change yet. That's very possible. But it's also possible that the stuff you're being asked to do, you don't feel is morally right. For whatever reason, you might feel that we've taken a weird turn in education. I mean, there could be a million reasons why you feel tired. It could even be personal reasons. But I think as we're reflecting on this, you know, Amy shares that story about that teacher she's working with, to where she was like, yeah, do these great things. You have these great ideas. Go for it. And the thing about empowerment is when you empower someone to do something, and if you really launch onto it, you're going to put everything you have, just like our students, when we empower them to own their learning, when we empower students to explore books and explore math and explore science and explore history, it's they put way more into it. They put so much work into it, and it's a great, they take ownership of it. And when you tell a teacher to that, when you give a teacher freedom to be empowered and to control their classroom and to control their professional development, what you end up getting is a teacher who is going to be exhausted, but in a really great way. It takes effort and time to do what we do and to rise above and to do extraordinary things. You're going to be tired. And I think that's really important, because some people need that and some people really want that. And I think a lot of teachers feel like they don't have permission to be rock stars. I feel like so many people feel like they have to fit in this educational box, that we don't get to do the fun stuff, right? We don't get to do certain things like that. And when we do, it's a rare thing. And the thing I keep running into is I keep going, well, why not? Why not? Why restrict what we're doing? Why not push our classes to do crazy things? Why not do these crazy classroom transformations and these huge projects that take time? Like right now in my own class, I'm trying to do a lot of PBL type learning things, project-based learning, problem-based learning, and I'm not very good at it. I struggle with getting my students to that point, and I struggle with the control aspect of the PBL, and it's something I'm working through, but I know they're big and they're awesome, and I know that they can literally change the learning for our students. So I'm tired doing it, and I'm frustrated at certain points. But it's good work that I need to be doing, and I have the freedom to push that. And I think we should all take a moment within this episode, after this episode, at any point you're listening to this, is to pause and go, what type of work is happening in your room? What type of work are you doing as the educator? What type of work are your students doing? And are they conducive to the well-being of both? Is the teacher being taken care of with the type of work happening, and is the student? And I think if there's a no in either of those categories, then we're not doing the work that we need to be doing. It's not enough to say it's about the students only. It is about the teacher. It is about you. If you get anything else from this episode, I want you to know that as the educator, you matter, no matter what people say at your school. If they say it's only the students that we're focused on, they're wrong. You matter as an educator. just as much as the students. You need both for a successful learning environment, and it's something we should always remember. Now, with that said, I'm going to let us go back into the conversation with Amy Fast. Enjoy. How do you get it, like, when you're working with your teachers? Well, actually, I guess I should preface this. How much do you, as an administrator, find time to actually be one-on-one with your teachers? Because I know with discipline and all kinds of other things that are on your plate, it's hard to sometimes work directly with the teachers.
We have 4 administrators. Our school is 2,200 students, and we have a principal, a discipline assistant principal, and 2 of us who are curriculum assistant principals. And the benefit of being the curriculum assistant principal is we actually have an embedded staff development model where twice a month teachers come to a professional development that's embedded in their workday. So our teachers have 90-minute prep periods, and so part of that prep period contractually is what's considered a duty time, and that duty for our school is teachers learning together. And so we'll get a room of like 10 to 15 teachers leading professional or participating in professional development that's often also teacher led. And I'm in that room with them every single Wednesday. And so every Wednesday I get to have meaningful conversations about their craft with them. And it's a small group of them, so it gets to be pretty individualized. And so that, I think it gives me an advantage in terms of having more face-to-face time than a lot of administrators would get with their staff. And in addition to that, I just, I struggle with spending time in my office when kids and teachers are out in the halls and in classrooms. So our whole admin team is rarely in our offices. We're out and about talking with teachers and students as much as possible. So I feel like I talk with teachers as much as humanly possible. And at the same time, we have like 200 staff in our school. And so I sometimes feel like being an administrator is like reverse whack-a-mole. So you know that game at the fair where like the moles pop up and you have to hit them with the...
Yeah.
And they keep coming up and you're... Well, I feel like sometimes what my job consists of mainly, and I felt like this as a teacher too with students, is the reverse. Like I'm trying to lift people up. And as soon as I feel like I've helped to empower someone and help them feel good about their work and help them with whatever, then someone else is starting to drown. And then I got to pick them up real quick. And so a lot of the work just feels, what feels insurmountable to me sometimes is spending the quality time with teachers that really makes them feel seen and heard and valued enough to, and frequently enough, that they stay feeling valued at the school. And so that constantly, like I'll go for a few weeks and be like, man, I feel like I haven't seen this one teacher for whatever reason. We haven't been in the same room, or I haven't been in her classroom, or, and then I feel horrible. And then I really make an effort to, you know, go meet with him or her, or write her cards, or be in her classroom. And then, you know, a week later, I'm like, oh man, I haven't seen this other teacher. And so that's, I feel like a lot of that is the reverse whack-a-mole of which I speak, where I'm just trying to lift people up as much as I can. And that work is endless for us as well. And it's the important work that we do, but we also as administrators, have things on our plates that a lot of teachers aren't aware of, whether it's, you know, reports or getting certain numbers in or whatever. And that's the same kind of paperwork that teachers have that, you know, sometimes it feels like, man, if I could just ignore this piece of it, I could really do right by the humans in my building. And yet none of us can ignore that piece of things either.
Yeah. And you brought up a really good point, which is the idea, or the fact that the most powerful thing we can do for students and teachers is to look at them and say, I see you, I hear you. And yeah. And it's super powerful if you can get them to believe it. You know, it's one thing to pay homage to it. But, you know, I've seen great teachers lose passion or their positivity because they feel like administration isn't paying attention to them or doesn't care about their ideas.
Right.
From your perspective, how do you go about – like checking yourself to make sure that you're not just paying lip service, that you're not just, you know, pulling them up just to go there and show that you're doing it, but you're actually in the process of it.
That's a really good question. I the way that teachers lose sleep about students who they feel are struggling in their class, I lose sleep about teachers because I want them to be doing okay. And I want them to know that we care that they're doing okay. And I think part of it is, you know, there are administrators that do the recognition thing as a hoop. Like I've been a part of those schools where it's like, and here's my, it's the second Thursday of every month, so I'll send you a card because that's what is on my schedule to do on the second Thursday of every month. Or here's a little trinket, it's Teacher Appreciation Day. Like, that's the kind of stuff that feels super disingenuous and that actually I think is more demoralizing for teachers than if it's authentic. And so I'm not going to do something because I feel like I should if it's not coming from an authentic place. And I think part of it is getting to know your staff. There's some staff members who, you know, I know that those words of encouragement, if I write them a card, that's going to mean a lot to them. And when I write them a card, it's not just, you know, thanks for working hard, thanks for being you, but it's really like specific to what they offer our school and the strengths that they bring. And there's some teachers that just, they want to see me in their room, and they want to see me in their room often. And that's going to be what speaks to them in terms of the value that I place on their work. And then there's some teachers that just want me to let them do their thing, like stay out of my way and let me work and give me the autonomy to do what I needs to be done with, no needs to be done with students. And that's what I try to give them. So I think it's the same work that teachers do with students in terms of getting to know their students and getting to know what makes them tick. And you're not going to be able to can appreciation or box it up or, you know, read a book that says, here's the best way to appreciate your staff, because that's disingenuous and not authentic. But it really comes down to getting to know each teacher and what they need.
We talk about, you know, as teachers, we talk a lot about like giving our kids genuine tasks or genuine appreciation and stuff like that. And it's one of those things that you just kind of have to be in it to be able to do it. Like in my classroom, this year is like my year. Like, I feel like I finally, like all the training and everything is finally like coming together and experience and stuff like that. And I'm confident in every move I do is purposeful, at least most of them. The relationships that I've built, I've never been struggling on the relationship piece, but this time I feel like they're deeper, they're more true, and we're getting a better back and forth. But I could imagine how difficult that could be from an administrative side, because administrators, you guys have, you know, you have perceived power, even if you don't actually have the power a lot of teachers think you do. Mm-hmm. Like one of my coaches at my school, he always talks about people. When he walks in a room, he's like, I give suggestions. This isn't a demand. He was like, right. I might tell you how to fix something, but I'm not your boss. But administrators, sometimes it feels like you guys are our bosses, right?
Yeah.
In a way you are. So right. What's that balance like for you? Do you like preface every conversation you have, or is it really about building that relationship so that part kind of goes to the back of their mind?
Well, I think that when teachers were first starting to get to know me, I think there was a hesitancy for them to be completely vulnerable because of that power differential, that perceived power differential, and you know, you're unsure about if you have an administrator and you're wanting to be completely transparent in front of them, you're unsure about what the repercussions of that will be. And I think the best way that our team has created that transparency and vulnerability is to be vulnerable ourselves. Like I'm super transparent about what my weaknesses are, and I laugh about them often with my staff, and I encourage my staff if there are things that I'm doing or saying that is bothersome to them, for them to come in my office and let me have it. I mean, to be honest, I'm one of those rare people who actually feels more comfortable with conflict or confrontation if it's on the table. Like I'm totally fine with someone crying in my office or being frustrated with me. I'm not fine if I think they might be frustrated or think they might be angry down and they're not saying anything, then I'm struggling because I'm having to guess at what might be the issue. And then I can't speak openly about how to address it. Whereas if they come in and they're just like, you know, Amy, I'm really irritated with you, then I feel like, oh, okay, I feel relaxed now. We can deal with the issue. We can talk it out. And I think that it's just like family or friends. You have enough of those moments where you can both be real, then that's what builds trust. And I'm certainly fallible regardless of my position. And I've got tons of things that I'm working on too. So if I can be open with my staff about my own struggles and what I'm working on, and you know, I come to them for advice on what I can do better. And that in turn helps them to feel comfortable coming to me for advice on what they can do better. I don't see this kind of hierarchical leadership structure in schools when I think about schools that are done well. I see a horizontal kind of structure with students and staff and admin and parents all on that same plane. So I don't know how to speak to it, your question simply, other than the authenticity from administration is crucial to building that trust where teachers feel like they can talk openly and be vulnerable in their craft as well.
Now, that's a really great segue to, I want to read this tweet real quick of yours. Hopefully it doesn't make you feel awkward having me read your own words back to you. It's really for the audience though, but I want to read this because this connects to kind of I'll just read it. So it says, I struggle when leaders justify doing something that dismisses or hurts teachers by arguing it's all about the kids. To help students thrive, we must take good care of their teachers. Teachers who are trusted, inspired, and empowered are likely to do the same for their students. So this phrase, it's all about the kids, right? It's all for the kids. Well, we're doing it for the kids, so you should be happy. When you hear that phrase, what is that phrase usually being used for in this context?
It's usually, like I said, I often hear it when we're justifying why someone else can be mistreated, because it's all about the kids. So it's not really about you, and therefore we're going to do this thing. I don't have specific examples that come to mind, and maybe because it's so prevalent in our field. And there are times when that phrase is used and there's absolutely everyone agrees and is on board, and there's no dismissing of all of the stakeholders that are involved in doing what's best for kids. But I don't think that there's anything that we do that is best for kids that jeopardizes adults' well-being. I don't think that there's like, oh, if we just changed course and did this, which is great for kids, and it would unfortunately though also harm adults. And yet we need to move forward. Like I can't think of a thing that we should do that's really best for kids that is harmful to adults.
One of the big things that has been on my mind just from being involved with more teachers, you know, now as the podcast reaches more and more people in more and more countries, you know, we get messages and, you know, private messages from people who are like, the podcast has helped us realize, you know, why we got into teaching after 20 years. You know, it's reminded us like how fun, you know, stuff could be, right? Which is awesome. But my thought is always like, man, what is going on at these schools? And when you see these Facebook posts or teacher groups and stuff like that, all these people, like, their negativity about their job and their profession is coming from a source, most likely their school or their district or something like that. And it's like, why do we make decisions that on the surface, because no one's out there to hurt kids, right? No one is like, this decision's going to make all of our kids suck at life, right? but we keep making a lot of these decisions in a lot of parts of the country and other countries that make teachers feel worthless. It makes them feel less valued. It makes them feel overworked and stressed out. And it's like, why is this happening?
Right. And there's this underlying, like, what we're hearing when we hear someone say it's all about the kids. If I'm a teacher and someone tells me that, implied in that statement is that I don't, as a teacher, want what's best for kids. Like, if someone has to tell me that, or that I'm not doing what's best for kids. And so I think it's kind of insulting too, when we use that as ammunition to tell teachers to work harder or accept the mandate or buy into the initiative. Because it's almost like a guilt trip, you know?
Yeah, sorry, it's all about the kids. I know your life's going to suck for the next year, right. But it's for them. I know
for you, it's all about you, but for the school, it's all about the kids. So get over yourself. I mean, I think it's easy to, like, because this work is so hard, for us to assume the worst in people whose jobs we haven't done. So I know that it's easy to oversimplify the role of an administrator, and it's easy for teachers to oversimplify what our classified staff do. And if they could just do this, or for classified staff to point fingers at teachers and say, oh, if they would do this differently, or for counselors to look at teachers and say, you know, you need to understand what kids are going through, and for teachers to look at counselors and say, you need to understand the demands that are placed on us for getting kids to achieve. I mean, we unfortunately, when we're feeling demoralized, we make these different stakeholders scapegoats for some of the issues in the schools. And we all need to recognize the intent of all the stakeholders that work in schools. And I personally think that everyone's job is complex, and we could benefit from assuming the best intent in those that are doing those jobs, because if we haven't done them or haven't even done them recently, then we can't assume we understand the difficulty and the constraints that those stakeholders are facing.
This brings us back to a point you made a little earlier, which was, you know, it's you, your administrator, your staff tries to get a pulse kind of what it is. You try to raise voices up to see what people need and stuff like that. What are some of the ways that your staff has found effective at listening to the teachers in a way that allows them to speak openly about their needs, wants, or ideas for what the school or their classroom needs?
Well, we're trying to move to we sometimes joke in our school district that our school district is called McMeetingville and not McMinnville because of the amount of meetings that we have. So we've really tried to push for all meetings to be about deliberation and not about nuts and bolts. And I know a lot of school districts are going to that. So that when we are asking teachers to come to the table, then we're giving them the time to deliberate and surface their voices about various issues. We also do, just like we do a student survey every year at our school, we do a staff survey as well. And we ask really, you know, questions that could be tough for us to read the answers to, you know, like, how do you feel like we're doing it as an admin team in terms of recognizing you, and questions about equity on staff and workload and all sorts of things that it's easier certainly to turn a blind eye to, but not in the long run, because these are things that are often festering and teachers need to speak to in order for us to improve our practices so that they can do their jobs effectively. We also have 10-minute meetings every year with the principal. So the principal meets with everyone on staff for 10 minutes just to address their individualized needs, wants, concerns, et cetera. But I think regardless of these systems or platforms that we set up to surface voice, it's also just as much about the culture that you create that allows those voices be heard and fosters that kind of empowerment for people to own the whole success of the school. And, you know, coming back to our, you know, our original question too about teacher well-being, if I see a teacher who on the surface doesn't appear to be giving it their all, usually when you dig a little deeper, there's a well-being issue there. And oftentimes, whether it's how much the teacher feels recognized or how well they're taking care of themselves, it comes back to the fact that they feel that even if they gave 220% and did everything that we were asking them to do, they feel that it still wouldn't make a difference because the work is so hard and the job feels so insurmountable. And so I think so much of the work we do needs to be showing showing teachers how important the work they do really is and how much the work they do is making a difference. Because, I mean, when you're knee deep in it, it's so hard to take a step back and look at what you've accomplished and how students are thriving because of your work. And so if you feel like the job's insurmountable, it's really hard for you to give it your all because you feel like, man, I'm going to give it my all and I'm going to exhaust myself. I'm going to wear myself down and it's still not going to matter. And I think that's the part that can be so demoralizing for teachers. And we can't assume that if a teacher's not putting in as much as we think they should, that it's just because they're lazy or selfish. Oftentimes it's they just don't believe anymore that the work is going to matter. And that's that hopelessness is the foundation for everywhere that we go wrong in schools. When students experience hopelessness or teachers experience hopelessness, that's the unraveling of the potential for success right there.
I'm curious as to what advice would you give to a teacher who, because it's easy to say all of this and talk about being open and stuff when we're at a school that's functioning fairly well. Like, when there's open conversation going on, it's easy for a teacher or easier for a teacher to step up and say, hey, I feel like this is happening. Can we talk about it? Whatever. But there's a lot of teachers who are in places where, you know, it's like super strict administration. It's top-down management approach, basically. They don't feel open to do things. They feel like they have no ideas. They're just following a script or, you know, insert whatever issue they're having. From you to them, what could we possibly tell them as advice on how to handle these situations where they feel like they can't go to a certain place and talk about it?
Yeah, that's super challenging. And I certainly don't want to underestimate how difficult that is. I really believe in the value of leading up. And what I mean by that is that just because someone is in a position of power doesn't mean that they can't benefit from being led as well. And when I'm successful, it's not because I've like just done this amazing work, but it's usually because there's someone quote unquote below me or who is a colleague of mine who is inspiring me and empowering me and filling my cup so that I can keep doing the work I'm doing. And I think that what's hard with what I'm asking is that if you're talking about a teacher who's already feeling disenfranchised, and who I'm saying the answer to that is to lead up. So to lead a boss who potentially is not recognizing you or not valuing you or not being inspiring in his or her leadership. And so, but by doing that, you're essentially modeling for the person who you're struggling with, the kind of leader you want he or she to be. And I think that's the hardest work of all is the work that is leading up or leading across in terms of leading your colleagues who maybe are, not promoting a positive narrative, who are, stuck in this kind of toxic habituated thinking that's negative, and that's the work that I see the very very best teacher leaders doing, that is promoting a positive narrative and always redirecting the conversation to something that's more hopeful and more solutions oriented, and even modeling for their boss or their quote unquote superiors, what inspiring leadership really looks like and sounds like.
What would be your message to teachers, in administration who are, you know, they're in this situation. Maybe they feel like they're, as an administrator, maybe they're not feel like they're serving their teachers the way they need to be served. And as a teacher, maybe they feel like they're not being served or they're not being listened to or something like that. They're not feeling like their well-being is met or that anyone even cares. What would be like your overall message to these schools who are actively wanting to improve these things but aren't really sure the steps to take to get there?
Yeah, I think that one of the foundational norms, if you will, that our school operates by is to assume best intent always. So that's the starting place, because we can get in this vicious cycle of thinking that people are out to get us or thinking that people aren't wanting to do good work or aren't trying their hardest. And I think that if you don't have the right mindset when it comes to those with whom you work, in terms of that they most people, just like we say, kids do well if they can. Staff also, you know, mostly want to do well too. So if we can assume best intent in those with whom we work, then that's a culture changer right there. And then I always say people over task all the time. Like, it's so important. We can get so lost in the work sometimes and in the weeds that we get stuck on these tasks that we have to finish. And if we can always remember to prioritize people before tasks, and again, assume best intent in those people we're prioritizing, then no matter what the work looks like, it's going to be the right work.
Beautifully said, Amy. And I think that's a fantastic point to close on.
Well, thank you for having me.
You are, oh my God, you're my spirit animal, I guess. because no, there's so many things that you say in the, you know, throughout the discussion, and there are, one, you got me when you, if I wasn't a fan already, I became a fan when you were talking about how you love to argue and debate and stuff and put your ideas out there. But just some of the way you look at your job and education in general are, you know, these are the pillars that are really holding up kind of where I want to take my work as a teacher and then eventually into administration, all that stuff. So really fantastic to have you on. But before I let you go, I want you to, where can people contact you, find your work and all of that good stuff? I know it's promotion, but here's your 1 second.
My new Twitter handle, because I didn't really get Twitter handles when I was setting it up. I thought it was like a password. And then I kept trying to put in my name as a password and it kept saying it was being used. So anyway, I wound up with FastCran is my Twitter handle. And my email is fast.cranny, C-R-A-N-N-Y @gmail.com. And people can email me or contact me on Twitter. I'm not on many other platforms besides Twitter. I have a Facebook, but that's mostly personal. And then my Twitter is my professional account. But if I have time to, I'm really trying to work it on balance in my own life and being really present with my family when I'm home. But if I have time to engage in conversation on Twitter, I really love to do so. So Twitter is probably the best place to contact or message me there. And if not, you can always send me an email.
That balance piece, by the way, is like the one thing every time I talk to administration or teachers too, people are always like, if they've done it for like however many years, eventually it's like, okay, there has to be a balance because my family's going to start hating me.
Right. Gave up on going for balance and instead I just go for rhythm. Like I will have seasons of my life where I just can't sit still and never sleep and, you know, I'm working to the bone, and then I have seasons of my life where I'm like, maybe I'll shower tomorrow. So I think the rhythm piece is what I'm going to land on because the balance is just never going to be accomplished.
That's hilarious. Luckily I have a wife and family who they don't, you know, they know I love to work and stuff like that. And it's been a part of our lives since we did it. And she's kind of like my mastermind person anyway. Half of my ideas come from her. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's a healthy balance, in that regard. But anyway, for everything else, ladies and gentlemen, you know what to do. You go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com where you can find all of our episodes. Just click through them, find the ones you like. I put a tag cloud up there to see if you guys would rather look for that for subjects, or you know, you can browse however you would want. You can always find us on iTunes. Hit that subscribe button. That way all of our episodes get to you as soon as they are released into the interwebs, as they say. Go like us on Facebook, hang out with the community, come to follow me on Twitter, where we are having conversations all over the place, participating in Good to Great Chat from Mary Howard and all of her people that she runs that chat with. Amy Fast, make sure to go follow her, buy her book. She is a fantastic human being. I hope you love this episode as much as I did. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, have a good one.